So thank you very much for coming. We thought we'd be a little risque, a little bit like National Enquirer type title today called The Truth About Ourselves. It'll be a real positive message, but it's going to be based on some liberating information about ourselves. These are all based on the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We're one of about 400 branches all over the world. If it's in Spanish Fort, Utah, you know it's got to be just about everywhere, right? So sometimes we've got to disabuse ourselves of illusion before we can enjoy the bliss of reality. Just like in a field, oftentimes you have to get rid of the weeds before the really wholesome, nourishing fruits and vegetables can grow. So as we go about our days, we're very much, if we identify with this material body, this covering in the Bhagavad Gita, our bodies, be they black or white or Christian or male or female, are like, they're described as a coat. Nothing more than a coat, nothing more than a covering, nothing more than a vehicle. They're not the real self. But if we allow ourselves to be conformed by society into identifying ourselves as this body, then we're pretty much role-playing. We're pretty much projecting an image, we're playing a role, we're playing a part, we're creating an illusion for others to see. And none of that is the real us. And everybody else is doing the same thing. And so it destroys intimacy. It destroys the potential for intimacy, which is the basis for pleasure in life. If we don't have meaningful, intimate relationships, you're not going to replace that by stuff. You know, you're not going to replace that by cars or houses or bank balance. And you're not going to replace it by Facebook either. Face-to-face, meaningful relationships in which you grow as an individual, in which you develop your character. That's what we're put here for. And pretty much all of what we do, all of our time throughout the day, what we're doing and the image that we're projecting, the illusions that we're trying to create about ourselves, are pretty much inconsistent, out of sync with what's really going on inside of us. Who we really, really are. That's hidden, like back in the back part of a cave somewhere. And we're afraid to bring it out to light. Some of us may have shameful things in our past that we want to keep a lid on, and we don't want to find someone who loves us to confide or to confess those things. Some of us have unresolved guilt, like Earl. Remember the television show Earl? Oh, I forget what the title of it was. But he had unresolved issues. I think he had 230 people on his list, all of whom he'd offended in some way or another. And so that can create a lot of unresolved guilt. And it's going to be painful to go back into the past and dig that up and look at it and bring it to the light of day and to confide it and to share it with someone that loves you. And it's a conversation that we'd just rather not have. But if we're going to be true to what's really going on in our hearts and in our minds and with relationship to the past, and we're going to open things up to the future, then we need to address these truths, because these kinds of truths will set us free. And the worst thing that can happen in life is not that you're going to have a difficult conversation. That's not the worst thing that's going to happen, to have a difficult conversation with someone you love. There's a lot worse things can happen. Ask Tiger Woods. Ask Tiger Woods a long time ago, it might have been the lesser of two evils to have a difficult conversation with someone he loved than to go about trying to hide things from people that didn't particularly love him. So we try to fit in, we try to please our boss, our family members, our teachers. We're pulled in different directions at once, and we have to put on different hats for different processes, like the chameleon here on the tree, like the person deep back inside. There's a projected shell self, and then there's a real shell. And the problem is that not only are conversations impossible, because I'm not talking to the real you, you're not talking to the real me. Relationships are not possible, because I'm not the real me and you're not the real you. We're all trying to be something based on this body and trying to conform with what society would like us to be. And so none of us are who we seem to be. And doing this, we forfeit a basic truth in our life. If you think the worst thing that could happen to you is having a difficult conversation with someone about your past, there's a far worse thing that's going to happen if we don't do that. And that worst thing is that we're going to miss God's plan for us. Because Krishna came 5,000 years ago as the Supreme Personality of God, and then he came again 500 years ago as his own devotee, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he came to meet you as you are, not the illusion that you would like to project. He doesn't want to deal with the role that you have to play. He wants to meet you in your weaknesses, in your fallibilities. He wants to meet you as you are. He wants to have a relationship with you. And it's not because you've pulled the wool over his eyes and he really doesn't know how bad you are. That's not the reason. You can pull the wool over your society's eyes. You can pull the wool over your teacher's eyes. You can pull the wool over your boss's eyes. You can even fool your family members. But God knows what you're going to do before you even do it. He knows past, present, and future. So he knows the worst things about you. And yet he still wants to have a relationship with you. And if you don't want to expose and bring this falsity to the light, you're going to miss the chance to have a relationship with God and a relationship with other living beings. We're going to forfeit a central truth about God as well as about ourselves. Get one here that's... So Krishna came for the real you 5,000 years ago. You see the deity form on the altar there. Krishna is a name for God. This isn't our God versus your God or Christian God. This is God. And God misses each and every one of us. Although there are millions and trillions and zillions of liberated souls in the spiritual world with whom he has deep, intimate, meaningful relationships, you're missing and he doesn't forget that. You're missing and you're unique. And the nature of love is that it is addicting. The more love you get, the more you want. Any of us can attest to that, right? Any of us can attest to the fact that the more love you get, the more love you want. So God, who's the recipient of the love of trillions and trillions of liberated souls, is not satisfied. He wants each and every one of his parts and parcels to come within that circle of love. We gave the example a few weeks ago of a father who's home on Saturday morning. He's not working that day. And some of the kids are up. It's a bright, sunny Saturday morning, not like what we've been having recently. And they're out in the yard and they're playing. They're wrestling or throwing a football around. And the father and his two or three sons are having a great time. But there's another couple of sons that are sleepyheads. And they're still sleeping in. So not only the father, but the other children, they're as good a time as they're having, and they're having a great time, and it doesn't really take away from their time they're having, but there's just that niggling little thing. Wouldn't it be nice if those other two brothers and sons got up and joined us in this circle of love? So that's why God values you. That's why he comes here, not only once within the last 5,000 years, 5,000 years in cosmic time is just a click of a finger, the blink of an eye. And he's come not only once 5,000 years ago, but he came 500 years ago as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in order to have a relationship, not with the fake you, not with the illusion, not with the image of you, but with the real you. And so when we realize this truth about ourselves and the illusion in which we regard ourselves, we can set the stage for freedom. We can release ourselves from that kinds of tension which comes from trying to be something or someone that we're not. Krishna does that for us. He offers that to us. He wants to meet us in our weakness and our brokenness. He's coming down to meet us right where you are, not where you'd like people to think that you are, but right where you are. He wants to get behind the illusion to that person who's deep inside. He wants to show you the person that you really, really are. So to go from here, where we are, the actors, the illusionists, to there requires some courage and some boldness. Like I said, it might involve one or two difficult conversations. So this is the reason. Might involve one or two difficult conversations, but when we understand that's who we are, courage and boldness rises from within us. Now this talk is going to have implications for any category of people that are here today. Some of you are first-time comers. Some of you have come intermittently over the weeks and months and years. And some of you have been here a long time. Some of you have been practicing devotees for years and years and years and years. So whether you're a first-time comer and just checking it out and you're not sure about the Krishna thing or who's this Lord Chaitanya or not even sure about the God thing itself, or whether you're someone who's kind of been circling around and you're, you know, you're not a regular attender, but every once in a while you get an irresistible urge to go out and see what's going down, you know, what's going down at the Krishna temple this Sunday. Or you're a long-time devotee and you've just kind of lost your zing, you've lost your zip. You don't have the same enthusiasm, that it's the same hankering that you might have had long time ago. So we're praying for each category of you, and we think that you'll take something out of here that will be beneficial. In the Bhagavad Gita purport to the second chapter, 46 verse, Prabhupada, our guru, writes, "The best purpose of Vedic culture is served by chanting the holy name of the Lord as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. When Lord Chaitanya was asked by a great Vedic scholar, Prakasananda Saraswati, why he, the Lord, was chanting the holy name of the Lord like a sentimentalist instead of studying Vedanta philosophy, the Lord replied that his spiritual master found him to be a great fool and thus asked him to chant the holy names of the Lord." So here's Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's an incarnation of God. He's a Messiah. And his business is going around with the street people, the riffraff, the people of ill repute, the ladies of ill repute, the thieves and the petty thieves, and he's encouraging them, not talking particularly philosophically, but just chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Telling them, they don't have to be religionists. It's not about religion, but it's about developing your relationship with God. God is absolute and therefore is not different from his name. When one says any bona fide name of God, whether it be Elohim or Yahweh or Allah or Krishna or Vishnu, one associates directly with the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya's movement was to move among the rank and file people and inspire them to reawaken their love of God. Now, Prakasananda Saraswati, this is in Benares, and even today, Benares is known for an intellectual academic community. The University of Benares has been there for literally hundreds and hundreds of years, and people pride themselves on their philosophical acumen. And Prakasananda Saraswati was at the top of his game. He was a sannyasi, he was a religious leader, he had 10,000 disciples. And when word came to him that this so-called incarnation of God, Lord Chaitanya, has come to Benares, and he's bypassed all the religionists, all the religious leaders, all the religious icons, the foremost of which was Prakasana. And he's out in the street. He's not even giving us a how do you do or, you know. He just goes right to the street people. So how can he really be a spiritual personality if he didn't check in with us first? You know, we got the franchise. You know, we got the franchise. Everyone, ask anybody. They'll all tell you, we're the greatest spiritualists in Benares. And he just walked right past us and went to the street. So Prakasananda might have thought offensively about Lord Chaitanya. You know, he's hanging out with all these kinds of petty criminals and all. So how can he be a spiritual personality? And finally, Lord Chaitanya went to see Prakasananda in a great hall where he was sitting with his 10,000 disciples. Prakasananda, because of his offensive mentality, he did not offer Lord Chaitanya a proper welcome as is due to a sannyasi, a renunciate. He did not offer him a nice sitting place. He did not offer him water to wash his feet. He did not offer him nice words of welcome, swagatam. And Lord Chaitanya, rather than barging in or gathering attention to himself, he sat where the shoes are. You saw downstairs where I'll put our shoes. It's kind of considered a muchi, impure place. Lord Chaitanya sat where the shoes are. And then Prakasananda Saraswati, perhaps feeling a little guilty, he said, come forward and join us, please. And then he asked him, why are you chanting these names of God like a sentimentalist, like a madman? Why aren't you hanging out with us? We're the religious people. If you're a spiritual personality, you should choose better company because you're going to be polluted by these low-class, sinful people. And the example is given that when the sun shines on a latrine or a urinal, the sun doesn't become polluted or contaminated because of the powerful effect of the sun. That area becomes antiseptic and prophylactic. So Lord Chaitanya was bringing a commodity that the religionists and the scholars were little interested in. If you're a merchant and you go somewhere, you don't want to offer your merchandise to someone who's indifferent to it. You want to offer your merchandise to someone who desperately needs it. So Lord Chaitanya had Krishna in the form of his name, and he's offering a personal relationship with Krishna, and the scholars and the religionists are more interested in rules and regulations and their pretension and their mundane prestige, and not at all desperate to reawaken their relationship with God in a real way. But the people in the street, at least, are well aware of the fact that on their own, they're not going to make it. They haven't made it to date, they're not making it today, and they're not going to make it in the future. At least the people in the street are aware that on their own, they have failed, they are failing, and they will fail over and over and over again. And they are in need of redemption from a higher power. They are desperate, you see. And that qualifies them more so than the great religionists, you see. Lord Chaitanya was described as patita pavan, not one who comes for perfect people. This church, this temple is not for perfect people. If you're a perfect person, you can leave because we haven't got anything to give you. Just like the hospital. If you're a doctor, you apply your trade in the ER in Harlem, Bedford, Stuyvesant, Watts. Your trade is not in demand at five-star Marriott hotels and on resort beaches. I mean, you may give a few Tylenol for a headache. You may treat a little cut. Or if you're in Beverly Hills, you do liposuction and cosmetic surgery. But if you're a doctor and you really want to apply your trade and you really want to help people who are in need of help and not some superficial cosmetic adjustment, you will put yourself where you're most needed, where you're desperately needed, and that's in the ER. So Lord Chaitanya, when he came, he didn't go to the pretentious so-called religionists. He went to the so-called sinful people, to the street people, to the criminals, and he offered them this simple process for reawakening their love of God. Vairagya Vija Nija Bhakti Yogana. He was Patita Pavana, the savior of the most fallen. He would like to save every soul, but it is unfortunately and ironic, only the most fallen who are interested in what Lord Chaitanya has to offer. He's equally interested in saving from birth, death, disease, and old age all the Prakasanandi Saraswatis of the world. Unfortunately, they don't reciprocate. They're complacent. They're thinking, it's not for me, it's for others. And so Lord Chaitanya came specifically for people who are broken, who are downtrodden, who are in over their heads, and who are desperate for redemption, for love of God. Similarly, his representative in the modern age, Srila Prabhupada, the founder of our international society, he had the same mood about him. You see the obviously pretentious, self-righteous Brahmin here on this side of the screen, and then you see Prabhupada. Prabhupada is in the Bowery in 1965. There were places in 1965, yoga was very fashionable, Bhagavad Gita is very fashionable. Anybody from India with brown skin and a little bit of charisma can open up a yoga studio in Upper Manhattan where everybody's rich and everybody's trendy, and they would be kept, they would be patronized, they would be paid well, they would live on an estate in the Hamptons or something, and they would have it made. And there were many yogis that did that, but Prabhupada didn't. He bypassed all that and he went to the Bowery in 1965, the most dangerous place on the face of the earth, because he realized that not in the upper crust suburbs is there the hankering, the yearning to latch on to the greater power and achieve redemption, but amongst the people on the street. Prakasananda Saraswati might have well been asked by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the same way that Jesus asked Simon in the New Testament. A master had two servants who owed him money. One of them owed him 50 rupees and the other owed him 500 rupees. He forgave the debts of both. Now which one would love the master more? What do you think? The one who was forgiven a 50 rupee debt or a 500 rupee debt? Which one do you think would be most appreciative and most loving of the master? What do you think? 50 rupee or 500? Yeah. And you're right. You're right. The one who has been forgiven more loves more. Who has been forgiven little, loves little. Who has been forgiven a lot, loves a lot. So at this point, you might be a little confused about what Lord Chaitanya is saying. Because we're told that we should follow the four regular principles as Krishna devotees. If you want to advance in spiritual life, you're supposed to give up illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating. You chant a certain number of rounds on your beads and you count how many rounds you do. And this would seem to smack of religiosity and religionism and so on and so forth. And so here it seems to be that Lord Chaitanya is saying, and Prabhupada is indicating, that those who have sinned the most are the most eligible for forgiveness and for redemption. It's almost like Lord Chaitanya is saying to Prakasananda Saraswati, you got to go to Vegas, baby. You haven't sinned enough. You gotta sin more, you know? You gotta sin more. So just go and spend a week in Vegas and do all the things they do in Vegas, and then you come back to me and then we'll talk. And then we'll talk. But actually, he's not saying that. He's saying that of the two, Prakasananda Saraswati and the street people, which one is more in desperate need of the help of the Lord, the forgiveness and the redemption of the Lord? Of the street person, the fallen women, the criminals, the petty thieves, and the religionists who do very little that's wrong, but who are pretentious and complacent, of the two, which one would you think would be in most desperate need of chanting and reestablishing the relationship with the Lord? Well, the answer is both. The answer is both are in desperate need. Because as soon as you say, I am good, that is a dangerous, insidious illusion, which is a huge stumbling block towards reestablishing your relationship with the Lord. Here it is said in Prabhupada's introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord, even a merchant, a fallen woman, or a laborer, or even human beings in the lowest status of life can attain the supreme. One does not need highly developed intelligence. The point is that anyone who accepts the principle of bhakti yoga and accepts the Supreme Lord as the summum bonum of life, as the highest target, the ultimate goal, can approach the Lord in the spiritual sky. So he's not saying you got to go and do a bunch of sins, but he is saying you have to be keen, you have to hanker, you have to be desperate for this. As soon as you're feeling comfortable and satisfied, you're going downhill, isn't it? When you're feeling comfortable and there's no tension, you're going downhill. So this brings us to this dangerous illusion, which if we address it and release it today, it'll give you tremendous freedom. We hang on to the illusion of our own goodness. There are illusions we have about God. There are illusions we have about other people. But today we're talking about an illusion that we have about ourselves, which is a dangerous, insidious illusion. And it's a huge block between ourselves and God. And the illusion is, well, I'm not perfect, but at least I haven't done that. I'm not perfect, but at least I haven't gone there. I'm no Mother Teresa, but I didn't do what she did. I'm no Mother Teresa, but I didn't do what he did. Compared to my messed up cousin, to that co-worker, to that neighbor down the street, I'm good. And good people go to heaven, don't they? Don't they? This is the illusion of one's own goodness. But in this material world, we are all fallen. We are all fallen. You know, we take such delight when we're at the supermarket checkout counter and we see a picture in the National Enquirer of the Globe of some movie star or celebrity whose life is spiraling out of control. They're strung out on drugs, or they're in the middle of their fourth or fifth divorce. And there's a glibness, there's almost a glee with which this is reported in the tabloids and on the TV. And we receive it with a kind of a glee. And why do we do that? Because compared to them, you know, I'm not perfect, but I never did that. I'm not perfect, but I would never do that, you see. And it encourages the illusion of our own goodness. But we're distracted because our lives We like to see others' lives spiraling out of control. Our lives have been spiraling out of control for hundreds and thousands of births. Our lives, our own lives, started spiraling out of control at the moment in the spiritual world we decided that we would rather live independently of God. We made a decision at some point in distant past, what would it be like to live separate and independent of God? At that point, we began to spiral. We went into a tailspin which ended us up in this material world. And with any spiral, you have highs and lows, isn't it? The spiral goes like this and goes like this and goes like this. So according to the information that we have, for thousands and thousands of previous lifetimes, we've been up and we've been down. We've been a demigod and we've been an animal. We've been a rich man, we've been a celebrity, and we've been a poor person. We've been an aristocrat and we've been a street person. We've been a demigod and we've been a worm in stool. You name it, we've been there. And sometimes it's good. Say, it's good if I'm a Brahmin, it's good if I'm a demigod, it's good if I'm an aristocrat. And it's bad if I'm an animal, or if I'm deformed, or if I'm sick, or if I'm poor. But actually, these are just points on this downward spiral. None of it is good. Because we are meant to live with God, the Almighty Lord, our Father. He wants us back home, back to Godhead. So from that point of view, all of it is bad. Being in this material world is a bad thing because we are eternal. And all we have to do to rectify the situation is acknowledge our relationship with the eternal, supreme, most high, supreme personality of Godhead. Otherwise, here is what we get ourselves into. This is the samsara, the wheel of samsara, the wheel of birth and death, the spiral that each and every one of us is in. You see the zebra on the right-hand side? He's known by his stripes. And convicts used to have those striped suits. I don't think they dress them that way anymore. I think now they wear saffron. But imagine if someone comes up to you in a striped suit or saffron and they say, I'm a very respected personality, you know. I own real estate and I go to church and I'm a very respected. He's wearing the suit of, it's his county jail. Are you going to believe what he says? His dress gives a lie to his claims. So you have a body, right? You have a body, you have a body, Rockefeller has a body, we all have a body. The body is the indication that our life, that we spiraled away from the spiritual world and we're continuing to spiral and we're not doing anything to stop that spiral until we wake up and realize who we really are and stop pretending. And God offers a hand. He extends a hand. He comes down personally as Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to have a relationship with the real you. But we're not interested. We're interested in going from, quote, bad to good, from cold to hot, from poor to rich, from ugly to beautiful, from class C prisoner in the world of birth, death, disease, and old age, to class A prisoner. Isn't that foolish? Isn't that foolish? In the prison house, one guy has curtains and he has a little better diet and he has some TV privileges. And another guy is under solitary confinement, eating bread and water. So if the fellow who's a class A prisoner is complacent, self-satisfied, pretentious, he's actually in more trouble than the fellow who's getting beaten every day eating bread and water. The fellow who's getting beaten in solitary, he wants to get out. Whatever he needs to do, hopefully, he'll want to do it to get out. But the guy with the curtains and all, he's perfectly content to stay there indefinitely. So this is not a very sane state of mind. This world is compared to a forest fire. The Sanskrit word is samsara. It's a blazing fire and we're all being consumed in it. So if your house is on fire, is it sane to say, well, I've got some time, you know, the fire won't reach my lazy boy for at least another 5 or 6 minutes, you know. So I'll just finish watching my TV show or finish the sports page, you know, or drain my big gulp. That's not sane. There's no room for complacency and pretensions. It's totally out of sync when there's a fire raging through your house. So Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada, Lord Jesus Christ, the message is the same. Get out. Experience the urgency. Become desperate to latch on and take advantage of the helping hand that the Lord is extending to us. It is said that when we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, the mood of the chanting, for it to be effective, is not lackadaisical, indifferent, casual. The mood of the chanting should be chanted like a child crying out for its mother. You know, a child knows when it's on the lap of its mother. It will put up with some passing around. Oh, here, you take her, hold her for a second. Let the aunt hold her for a second. Let the cousin hold her for a second. Let her sister hold her for a second. The baby will put up for that for a little while. But after a while, the baby begins to feel a profound sense of unease. And there begins to be a desperation. When am I going to get back in the lap of my mother? I want to be with my mother. I don't want to be passed around willy-nilly. And at that point, the baby may cry out, a heartfelt cry, Mama, Mama, Mama. So we've been passed around life after life after life, species after species after species, sometimes high, sometimes low, but the pain is always there. The pain is always there, and nothing can solve this pain. Nothing can relieve the aching in our heart because of being separated from eternal Lord. And He's also unremitting and inconsolable that we're not connecting with Him in love and devotion. We've all got this huge hole in our life, and we try and fill it with money and good grades and family and kids and social recognition. We even try and fill it with Greenpeace and ecology and saving the planet and vegetarianism and all. And yet the hole is so big that none of those hardly make a difference. It's a God-sized hole that can only be filled by God. And so we chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we'll just conclude this week, we'll finish next week, with this quote by Jayadvaita Swami. He says, spiritual realization, therefore, begins with awakening from one's bodily false ego to one's real identity as the spirit soul within the body. This spiritual insight gives one the enlightened vision with which to see other living beings in their true identities also. So we're addressing this self-illusion that most of us suffer from, that I'm good compared to others, I'm good, and good people go to heaven. Next week we'll look at that assertion. 99.9% of the people that are not consciously and systematically engaged on a devotional path, which is 99.9% of the population, if you ask them, what is it between you and God? If there is a God, if there's a spiritual world, maybe you don't believe in the God thing, maybe you don't believe in a spiritual world, but if there is, and that's a pretty big if, what are you doing or what are you counting on to bridge the gap? And 99.9% of the people will say, I'm a good person. I'm a good person. Heaven is a good place. God is a good God. So it stands to reason that good people go to the good place where there's a good God. But the whole thing falls apart if we look too closely at your definition of goodness. In this material world, some cynic said, but he was not too far from the truth, in this world, good is when I steal your wife and cattle, and bad is when you steal mine. But if you're a little bit discerning, you'll see that it's all bad. It's all bad. It's either stealing or being stole from, when in fact, everything was created by God, everything belongs to God, everything is made for the enjoyment of God, and it's not about us. It's about our being constitutionally created as His eternal parts and parcels. And anything short of that mark is bad. So tomorrow, or next week, we'll look at the illusion that we're all good people and we're going to heaven. And I'll just give you a little teaser. There is not a shred of scripture in Bible, Torah, Bhagavad Gita. There is not a shred of scriptural evidence to support the belief of 99.9% people that good people go to heaven. We'll leave you hanging there and take it up next week.